This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is BFM 89.9. I'm Khoo Soo Chuang, and I'm joined in the very cool studio by Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. Now, in about 15 minutes, we'll get into MyCC's role as a competition watchdog and how to strengthen it. But before that, markets, a sea of green.
Yes.
Very hijau.
So nice. On a Thursday, everything green. S&P 500 hit its record 4,000 level. So it was up 1.2%. NASDAQ up 1.8%. Dow up 0.5%. I wonder if that's driven by the Biden infrastructure plan. But across to Asia, everything is as well green. Back home, the KL share is up 0.6%. Singapore increased up 0.5%. Shanghai positive 0.7%. Nikkei positive 0.7%. And Hang Seng Hong Kong up 2%. That's big.
Yeah, quite a nice way to for markets actually yesterday. But just bear in mind today, Singapore and Hong Kong are closed for Good Friday, and so is the US later tonight.
That's the financial markets doing on Zainal Abidin for us. Did you get it, right?
Not everybody gets that, I think.
Hijau. This is our version of hijau. So to expand on financial markets, for more, we have on the line with us Carlos Casanova, a senior economist at UBP. Now, good morning, Carlos. What kind of knock-on effects on Asia do you get from U.S. President Joe Biden's $2.25 trillion eight-year infrastructure plan?
Well, as expected, President Biden detailed his infrastructure package before the end of March. That was unofficially the deadline, so there were no surprises there. The program will focus on transportation infrastructure, and it is intended to be financed, and this is quite important, via a corporate tax rate hike to 28% from 21%. And a 21% minimum tax on global corporate earnings. Now, there are two things that are noteworthy from that fact. First, I would be cautious about buying into this short-term optimism, as Republicans are likely going to reject the idea of future tax hikes. And moreover, despite 28% is lower than the levels that were in place before Trump cut taxes in 2017, it is still relatively high. It's above the OECD average of 26.5%. And so we do expect that it will exert pressure on earnings starting in 2022. So we see slightly less upside there compared to, for example, some of the other Asian asset classes where 2022 should be a better year.
Yeah, Carlos, U.S. and global crude oil prices fell on Wednesday on concerns about waning European demand despite the continued recovery seen in the U.S. and other regions. What's your outlook on oil?
We have seen definitely an increase in concerns about European demand. In fact, France announced that the whole country would enter a third full lockdown on Sunday, and measures would remain in place for at least 4 weeks, if not longer, as a result of rising cases in the continent and concerns surrounding the safety of the AstraZeneca shot. So that, in a sense, gives you an idea that at least European demand is not going to come back rapidly in 2021. It's going to remain relatively muted. And so that cyclical rotation narrative, at least in the case of Europe, is a little bit overplayed in our opinion. In terms of what that means for oil, well, it means that there will be slightly more downside pressure on the demand front. Of course, in terms of oil, most of the upside in recent months actually reflects supply-side constraints and not a synchronized pickup in global demand for oil. So we do expect that the fact that demand from key markets in Europe will be more muted than expected, and that some of these supply-side factors are not going to be permanent, will translate into a slightly weaker outlook for oil, especially if you compare oil with other commodities where it is much harder to reverse the bottlenecks on the supply side. For example, industrial metals such as copper, it's very difficult to invest in mines, and there's a real supply side shortage, and also demand is more closely tied to China and the USA. And the same is true for some of the rare earth minerals that go into all of the electronics manufacturing. So we do see more upside there, a little bit less upside on oil, as of course a lot of that supply is only curtailed through political agreements and some COVID-related disruptions in the US. But oil will remain around $65 per barrel in the remainder of the year.
Meanwhile, Carlos, there's an anticipation for stronger March manufacturing PMI numbers for the region following, you know, that sharp rebound in China's official PMI. But what are your expectations?
So China's official PMI figures for March exceeded expectations. it was not entirely surprising given the large base effect. And this is something that will also benefit other Asian economies this month and also going into Q2, because remember the base effect in China was in Q1, whereas for many Asian economies, that base effect is in Q2. Now, in the case of China, the recovery was led by construction, which increased a lot to 62.3, and services. So the non-manufacturing PMI was 56.3. And that is despite travel measures were discouraged during Chinese New Year. Of course, we are seeing a normalization of conditions. People are allowed to travel now, and that is going to benefit demand in the coming months, which should translate into a little bit of upside on the PMI front. On the contrary, the manufacturing employment subcomponent remains subdued, and it barely exceeded the level of 50 for the first time since April last year. Likewise, Caixin's private GOJ, which captures a larger share of SMEs and exporters, actually declined to 50.6 from 50.9 in February. So in sum, what the PMI numbers are telling us is that there is some upside bias to growth forecasts in Q1 in the case of China and Q2 in the case of Asia. However, contrary to what recent volatility in equity markets may be suggesting, the authorities will not rush to remove policy accommodation anytime soon.
Carlos, the World Trade Organization has raised its projection for growth in global trade in 2021 to 8%. Is this a sign of a sustained recovery for the pandemic moving forward, or is the worst over?
In all honesty, it's a little bit of both. So it is a sign that we are seeing some recovery from the pandemic and the worst is over, in the sense that we do expect global GDP to tick up to 5.5% this year. In the case of Asia, that growth would be even higher at 6.6%. And that is going to fuel better performance on the export front. There is also a very significant base effect, as there was a contraction in Q2 in global trade in Q2 last year. And that is, of course, going to bolster the numbers in 2021. So that is probably what the WTO is referring to when they've increased their growth forecast to 8%. However, keep in mind that the recovery is not homogeneous, it's rather uneven. We are seeing discrepancies between different regions, and even within regions in Asia Pacific, we are seeing sharper growth in places such as China and India, where some of the ASEAN countries are just going to take a little bit longer for them to get along with their vaccine rollouts. So overall, it is a bit of both, and some caution should remain in place as a result of this uneven recovery.
Bringing it back home, Bank Negara Malaysia released its annual economic and monetary review on Wednesday, projecting a rebound of 6 to 7.5% in 2021, right, for the economy. So are these in line with your GDP projections for Malaysia?
Generally speaking, yes, they are broadly in line with our expectations. Our growth forecast for Malaysia remains slightly below Bank Negara's latest revision at 5.5%. And that is reflecting some of the ongoing uncertainty surrounding COVID-19 virus containment measures, and also the fact that there is slightly less room for Malaysia to implement monetary and fiscal policy stimulus compared to other markets in the region where we've seen a lot of fiscal and monetary being pumped in. So that is going to potentially lead to a slightly slower pace of recovery, especially on the demand front. And we have a base effect on inflation that will kick in May this year. So that is potentially also going to derail growth efforts going forward. On the upside front, of course, there are two factors that we have to monitor and that would cause us to revise this forecast up. First one is oil prices. If oil prices do indeed exceed 65 barrels, they reach more like 70 by the end of the year, that will benefit Malaysia as it's a net energy exporter. And also in case the government is able to expedite its vaccine rollout program, that will help tremendously on boosting domestic demand.
Thank you, Carlos. That was Carlos Casanova, the senior economist at the Hong Kong-based UBP. Now, you know, just some metrics in and around Malaysia's GDP. Obviously, Bank Negara has scaled it back, but when you compare their forecast to what the street forecasts, the street, on a consensual point of view, looks at it from a 5.5% perspective, which is obviously clearly lower than what Bank Negara expects. And then I think to myself, right, where does this growth come from? Where does the consumption come from? Especially in the context of the household debt to GDP ratio, which has spiked to, 93.5% of GDP. Highest it's ever been, or near the highest it's ever been, right?
It's a very good question, because yesterday we had a conversation with Julia Goh, and she also
Senior economist at UOB.
And she made a very good point, which you said she had a lower projection than what Bank Negara was saying, 6 to 7.5%. And you're right, it is driven by private sector consumption.
Yeah.
But she's also saying, look, let's see how the private sector consumption is. And then she's also open to readjusting her numbers, because there are a lot of factors that drive that. There's the ICNA element, where cash is coming into the system. You're seeing the vaccination program roll out. So there are many factors that could have spiked the number up a bit.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you've also got to ask yourself, it's also a capital availability issue, right? You might have these one-off payments coming, but they're not sustained. They're not recurring. And if you're afraid for your job, or you don't have enough cash left over after paying for your loans, and, you know, I mean, what is that? 15% of Malaysia's population is now under TAR, right? Targeted assisted repayments, right?
BRIM, a form of BRIM, right?
A form of BRIM. So all these things are not going to be, they're not permanent, you know what I'm saying?
But you're hoping that there will be a general recovery, you see. So if your government, you know, has already pumped so much stimulus into the system, and if businesses don't actually go under and people still keep their jobs, or actually there's an improvement in the job market.
So the sentiment is a big issue.
Yes, the sentiment is the part which I think economists, you know, it's almost like putting your finger in the wind and feeling where the breeze comes from. It's going to be difficult to gauge it. And so they'll look at many indicators. One, of course, is, you know, spending. I think that's going to be important. Retail spending is important. But at the same time, there are nonetheless still headwinds. You've got inflation coming up because the low base effect. All prices have risen. Global food prices have also risen. And that's going to be reflected in our inflation figures. So, you know, virus containment is the other thing. How fast can we get our vaccination program? I think there's so much expectations of that.
Hinged on that.
Yeah. So if you can get that out faster before year end, then definitely sentiment will improve, not only just in terms of the consumer, but also businesses, which is important.
Exactly. Yeah, so essentially, it's the way you feel, right? If you're confident about the future, you go and spend. And if you're a business, you go and invest. If you're not confident about those two things, you won't do those.
So the business side sounds interesting, because when we were talking to her yesterday, some of the good things is that trade is doing very well. Export, imports, I think that's moving the number quite a bit. But there's also very high forecast on construction and also services.
And manufacturing.
So that seems to be also a bit on the higher side in her projections as well.
Yeah, the one more thing that might still not move the needle is also the markets, right? Especially the share market. If the share market is quiet, you don't have that feeling of wealth. You know what I mean?
It's done extremely well from March. It's just that we've kind of gotten to a point at 1600 and we don't seem to be moving forward. And I think that has to come from the actual earnings of the corporates. Because at the moment, this good news, or the good news that we're actually seeing now, is already priced in. But what's next?
Okay.
It's all forward earnings, isn't it?
Okay, 7:17 now. We'll come back after this with a discussion on competition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.